I'm Dr. Scott Lyons, and you're watching or listening to The Gently Used Human. There's a lot of talk about self-love these days, but what does it mean to truly love and accept yourself, especially in relationship with others? Could it be that it's an act of embracing our most vulnerable selves that provides a portal to deeper intimacy with others? Well, today I'm joined by the inspiring Dr. Laura Berman, a renowned expert in the field of relationships, self-worth, and emotional resilience. Dr. Berman shares her personal and professional insights into the transformative power of self-love and the pivotal role it plays in shaping our connections with others. We explore the delicate interplay between pain and pleasure and the unique concept of quantum sex, where energy and emotion intertwine. Join us as we uncover the profound impact of self-love, not only in our personal lives, but in the way we relate to the world around us. Let's dive in. Dr. Laura, welcome to The Gently Used Human. I am so elated to have you on the show and have you bring your wisdom to the listeners of The Gently Used Human show. Thank you for being here.
I'm so happy to join you. Thanks for asking.
My pleasure. Speaking of pleasure, how's that for a transition?
That was good.
I want to talk about love, sex, and relationships just off the bat. How do we love and be loved better?
Yeah. And that's what I'm here for. You know, when I'm here for that. Yeah. I came here for that, evidently. You know, it really, if I had to like sum it up, and I'm not just saying this for like the cutesy Hallmark card sound of it. It really is true that everything in terms of what you really want in your love life starts with you and your relationship, who you attract in, who you are attracted to, the nature of your dynamics in your relationship, how your partner is or isn't showing up for you. You know, a lot of that obviously is beyond your control, but a surprisingly huge amount of it really starts with how willing you are to love and accept and wholly understand how worthy of love you really are. And once you do that, and the more you do that, and the more you become friends with your shadows, and the more you resolve your wounds, and the more you move through your traumas, those big T and little T traumas, the higher caliber of love you're capable of giving and receiving. There is a direct correlation.
Hmm. You know the famous quote by Dr. RuPaul?
RuPaul is a genius and deserves 12 genius. PhDs, but go ahead.
I think so. I'm going to just call her Dr. RuPaul for sure.
Yeah.
The idea of like, how are you going to love someone else until you love yourself?
Yeah.
I want to both honor that and challenge it with you.
Yeah.
If we have a moment together, because we know from like the research, sometimes if we can't love ourselves, it's partly because it wasn't modeled.
Yeah.
And so like sometimes the process of loving ourselves is to receive the love of others and absorb the felt sense, the embodiment of it, to possibly know it for ourselves. That's an idea I'm throwing out. I want to like see where that lands.
I'm not opposed to that idea within reason, but I will return the challenge a little bit.
Yeah.
And say that, okay, so let me just tell you what I agree with, which is that you're absolutely right. If you haven't had the experience of being loved and accepted and cherished and held, that one of the ways that you start to connect with that is through the experience of that, right? And so I totally agree with that. The tricky part is that when you are someone who's living from a really wounded place and who has never had that experience, you are willing to settle for breadcrumbs. Yeah. And you also, on an energetic level, you know, and over the past, well, I'm sure we'll get into this, but over the past 10 to 15 years of my career, I have added much more metaphysical elements to my work and quantum physics and all kind, you know. And so from that standpoint, right, when we are living from a place of unhealed, deep wounding, and we are trying to love and be loved from that place, the people who we're going to attract in and be attracted to in order to love us, who are going to love us, they are going to have a thimbleful of love. Their full cup of love, huge runneth over cup, is going to be a thimble size. versus a big gulp, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you won't get love and that you won't receive love, but you also may get and receive abuse or gaslighting or dysfunction, because until we work through that stuff, that's what we are an energetic match for, whether we like it or not. And it sucks, because then we get into relationship after relationship with people who can't love us in the way that we deserve. And then our low self-worth gets cemented even more. See, I'm not worthy of love. See, I can't be loved. See, I don't deserve love. And so it kind of mirrors back these false beliefs we have about ourselves. So that's why I think it's tricky. But that doesn't mean that you can't create. I mean, my husband sort of teases me, and I have to work against collecting too many broken little birds, because I am very attracted to friends. I mean, obviously not love, because I have my love of 20 years, 20 plus years, but friends. You know, I feel I'm so good at loving because I love myself so deeply and I've healed myself so deeply. So I have immense capacity for love. And I have so many friends who I connect with, even recently, who I can see and feel that lack of experience. And I want to, you know, they have all these other wonderful attributes that make me want to be friends. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not a mutual thing. But I'm also very aware that I'm giving them that experience of being cherished and loved and accepted that they may not have had before. So you can create that in friendships and in connections. You don't have to like go and enmesh your life with someone who isn't going to love you in the way you deserve in order to start building a capacity of being loved. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering if we can, because you were starting to share your own personal journey, and can we talk about Dr. Laura BSL before self-love and then post BSL? Like, what were you like before and after? Like,
I was a codependent, people pleasing, hot mess before.
Woo, sing it.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I grew up very privileged and compared to most people, so I'm not going to knock it in many ways. Yeah. And my parents did the absolute best they could and had the best intentions, but my mother was a depressed, completely unempowered codependent. Who completely parentified me. I mean, I joke that I was conceived to take care of her, because I was conceived when they found out my dad was going to Vietnam. And I had an older sister, but my mother really wanted a baby that she could cuddle and snuggle and who would keep her company. She was a real introvert, very socially anxious. So she conceived me in order to be her little security blanket and comfort while my dad was gone. And it never, you know, and it continued from there, which was obviously with all of these traumas we go through, there's the light side, you know, there's a beautiful side to it and the gifts we get from that. I wouldn't be the therapist I am today had I not been conceived to do it, right? But my dad could be very emotionally abusive. He was definitely a toxic narcissist. There was a lot of philandering, a lot of gaslighting, a lot of criticism, a lot of over-sexualization of us and of women. So, you know, there was a lot of trauma in there. And I did not grow up, you know, I grew up externally referenced, I would call it. You know, my sense of safety was only available when I was lifting my mother up, when I was making someone laugh, when I was, you know, so when I was really little, people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would say a nurse or a comedian. And I never really understood when they would recount that later. I would be like, why did I say that? And eventually I realized, of course, that was my little girl's understanding that there were two things I could do to keep myself safe and make all the grownups around me well enough to take care of me. And that was to make them laugh or to take care of them, be their caretaker instead of the reverse. So I went into all sorts of toxic relationships and emotionally abusive and philandering partners, and even got married to one of them. So I've had my share of dramas and traumas for sure. And it really wasn't until probably 2010. So maybe, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years. So halfway through my career, I guess, so far, my mother died and she was like my codependent anchor person. I was so enmeshed with her. And so that was like the most devastating loss I could ever imagine. That broke me open. That was a really big, what I call AFGE, another frickin' growth experience. Those things that like break you apart and break you open and are a gift in the end because they throw all the pieces of the puzzle up in the air and a new picture is made. But that was really the beginning of what I like to call my reawakening, because I think I was really awake as a little girl, but it kind of got conditioned and teased out of me, you know, because my family couldn't hold that. But during that time, after she died, my mom died of what was essentially metastasized breast cancer in 2011. And by 2012, with no risk factors, I had breast cancer in the same breast.
Wow.
Because I was filming a television show for Oprah, I had three young kids, I had too much going on in my life to grieve. You know, I was sad, of course, but like I had to hold it together. So I just repressed, compressed whatever was needed, kept taking care of everyone and everything around me until I got sick. And so that was really the beginning of a huge shift internally. And by the way, reading your book about drama addiction, I was a severe drama addict, you know, and attracted it and was completely attracted to it, especially because that was the only way, one of the key ways that I could get my dad's peaceful attention was when I was sick or there was some crisis. That's when he would step up. So part of my healing, you know, and I wouldn't have even called it that till reading your book, but part of my healing was definitely recognizing that and moving beyond that, among many other things.
Mm. It's wild when crisis and being sick, that chaos is the love language that bonds us.
Isn't that crazy?
Or it's the currency of love. I won't even call it a love language. It's the currency for love.
Yeah.
That what we have to pay out to be attended to.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you're talking, and I want to hear more about the story in just a moment as well, but like, I mean, you especially talk about love languages, but like there's something that you brought up when you were sharing, which is maybe our love language isn't the same as our safe language.
Yeah.
Like the, what you were referring to with your mom and your parents, especially, is like, these are the things you had to do, say, or be in order to create safety.
Yeah. This is what I love about relationships and the reason that I never get bored doing what I do is that. Here's the bottom line. When you are having a relationship with someone, and this means any real relationship, but especially a love relationship or a close relationship, you are actually having a relationship with yourself through that other person. So all your wounds, and this is one of my, you know, when I see a couple, one of the things that, you know, it's kind of like a secret game. I always share it with them, but it's like the secret game I play with myself and them. Watching as their story unfolds and I understand each of their, you know, because I always tell them, I don't give a shit what the truth is. I care about what each of your realities are because that's what you're operating from. So who cares what the truth is? Like, let's find out what each of you think the truth is, right?
Yeah.
And as that story unfolds, it is so perfect. Mm-hmm. It is so perfect how we choose people who are going to trigger our shit. And we fall in love with them because of that. And we don't even realize we're doing it, right?
No.
One of the reasons I was attracted to my husband is because he is so on top of everything and so not someone I have to caretake or parent or lift up or, you know, he's got his shit together. He gets shit done. He's on top of stuff. And that's the gift side, right?
Yeah.
The shadow side, which was going to trigger the shit out of me, is that he can be controlling and he can be a nervous Nelly and I can feel held back by him. And so like, even when we were raising our kids, when they were little, I would get so mad at him and so frustrated because he was so protective. Like, he didn't want him to jump on a trampoline. He didn't want him to, you know, he was seeing danger wherever danger lurked. And I was so annoyed because I felt like he couldn't just like let everybody have fun, you know? And then I slowly realized like, oh, him doing that actually allows me to let loose and not worry as much about their safety when we're together. Cause dad, you know, I can be, you know, body surfing with them while dad is lifeguarding, you know, so there are gifts in that.
Yeah.
There are gifts in all those things that drive us crazy about our partner, but also we choose our partner because of our wounds. You know, if you had a parent who wasn't emotionally there for you or emotionally neglected you're not going to necessarily choose a partner who's overtly emotionally neglected, but you're likely, if you haven't worked through that, to choose a partner who's a workaholic.
Yeah.
Now we have a social media, right? Who's a social media addict. We have that diagnosis now to add to the,
the plethora. Something that repeats it. I mean, and this is an interesting thing. It's a very gestalt approach, which is saying like, as humans, we're always looking to complete the, like, and finish the healing process of the wound. So we enter back into opportunities to open the wound to possibly heal it.
Yeah.
Thus, we have so many of the relationships.
And we're attracted to what we know. We're attracted to you. So there's that unconscious longing that this time I'll get it right and I'll work it through and I'll complete the circle and I'll, you know, but then there's also this, you know, that's why I always say to people, when you're dating and you first meet someone and you say, oh, I have butterflies, that's your body's warning system saying, watch out, danger. Like this is not, you know, when you meet someone who's really your person and there's an element of feeling like you've always known them. Sure. Yeah. But it's a feeling of like the excitement that you might have moving into your dream house that you've always longed for and how beautiful and exciting and fulfilling and like, yay, it's going to be. It's not like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. What if it doesn't work out? Like, you know, like that energy is, it's the energy of coming home in a really exciting way, not coming home to your little hovel where you've been living for 20 years, but coming home to something magical. That's what it feels like when you've met the right one.
I call that burst of unregulated energy the trauma tingles.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Trauma tingles and butterflies. Same thing.
Trauma tingles and butterflies.
People don't recognize the difference, especially if they've grown up with a lot of trauma tingles.
Yeah. It's basically a beacon to say I'm home and it's exciting.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But also part of our innate process of being human. So BSL, before self-love. Uh-huh. And then what was the crux at what point you started going, I think I'm going to try this whole self-love situation out.
Yeah.
And how did it go down? How did you generate all that care and compassion and love for yourself?
Well, I mean, listen, I was always, as a therapist, I was always aware of the importance of self-worth. But I think what I didn't fully understand was the fundamental difference between self-esteem and self-worth. Mm-hmm. Those are two totally different things, right? So self-esteem is, I love myself because I'm a compassionate person, I'm a good friend, I'm a committed mother, I am good at X, Y, Z, I can do A, B, C, whatever. So there's a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Self-worth is understanding, and to me, and I really do believe this, there is a spiritual element to it. I don't mean a religious element, but a spiritual element to it, because self-worth says, I deserve all the joy, all the love, all the abundance in the world, simply because I exist. Because the fact that I am here, each of us, that's not just me, you know, each of us is here, is an insane, impossible to wrap your head around when you think about it, miracle. The fact that that sperm and that egg came together and like actually took and made it 9 months and you were born and you're here in this body and you get to have this life, that in and of itself is an insane gift and miracle and all the evidence in and of itself that I feel like we need to prove that we are worthy, right? But what worthiness is understanding that you are a gift, that your life is a gift, and that you're a divine expression of love, you know, that just because you exist, you deserve it. That's a hard thing to wrap your head around intellectually, right? Mm-hmm. I learned rather quickly, it's something that really needed to be understood viscerally, like physically and energetically and emotionally more than intellectually, because it sounds like, you know, okay, fine. You know, when you think about it intellectually. Oh, okay, sure.
Oh, but, sure, yeah.
But when you start to tune in, whether it's through meditation or prayer, or now we're seeing more with the plant medicine journeys, you know, and you want to do those in a really guided and conscious way. But there are all these different ways that people are accessing their divine connection and starting to really feel into that. the truth of it that's always there, but most of us are too busy and too drama filled and too distracted to feel and to tune into. But as you get quiet, and so that's what happened to me, is that my life had to, you know, I always say the universe kind of scratches at the door and usually we don't listen, and then they knock and then they pound. And if you still aren't listening, they'll blow the whole freaking house down. And that's what happened to me with my mother dying. And then I had cancer. I had to completely stop my life. My kids were like, one was in total panic attacks. One was refusing to go to school and one was suicidal. I had to stop all my work with, I had a television show and a 5 day a week live radio show on Oprah Radio. Had to stop all of that, completely stop my life. And it was completely falling apart. And I'm going through chemo and breast cancer and everything else. So it took that. It took that to break me apart enough that the light could finally come in. And necessity is the mother of invention. So as I was like trying, it was mostly my kids. Like at that point, I was like, okay, I got to do something about my kids, in particular, the oldest, who's now 27, but he was in ninth grade at the time, who's suicidal, you know? So out of desperation, when my normal techniques of therapy and neuropsych evaluations and counseling, you know, wasn't working, I went to a medium psychic, who actually has become one of my dearest friends and greatest teachers, because she blew my mind. I hadn't been to one since I was, you know, in college. I didn't really subscribe to that stuff. I mean, I didn't mind it, but I was very much in the 3D realm at that point and had shut that part off when I was a little girl. And this woman, I go to see her mostly about my eldest, who was like, you know, triage. He was the highest, the biggest issue. Yeah. And she said, oh, you know, her name is Therese Rowley. She's amazing. But she's like, oh, let me go into his field. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, he's in school right now. You're going into his field. And she said, oh, he's clairsentient, which I had never heard of before, but it's basically an empath, right? What many of us are. It's where you feel the feelings that other people are feeling. But she said, but the interesting thing with him and with a lot of these kids who are being, you know, he was being diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder, depression, anxiety. One woman had even told me, a therapist had told me, that she thought he might be on the spectrum because she was doing an evaluation with him and she was smiling really big and saying, what am I feeling? And he said, sad. So she thought he can't read social cues, right? He can't read facial cues. Well, it all made sense because what Therese told me, she's like, the problem with him and many of these kids is that they feel what everyone else is feeling, even those feelings they're in denial about, but they don't know the difference between what they're feeling and the feelings they're picking up. So when he gets a feeling of depression or anxiety or fear, it's not even necessarily his. Yeah. Right. So when that therapist was smiling at him, he was feeling that she was really sad. So he said, you're sad, but he couldn't really tell the difference. So he would come up with reasons why I feel sad. It must be because the sky is gray or whatever. Like, so he was all over the place and like an ungrounded electrical cord. And so it made so much sense when she said that to me, even. And I was like, and she's like, here's what you need to do. You need to be really clear, like really calm when you're around him. And I said, well, I never let my kid, you know, even if I'm having the most stressful day, I'm, you know, smiling and calm. I'm not going to put that on them. She's like, no. Like it has to be internal. So she showed me for the first time how to move into what I now call the quantum love zone or home frequency, how to move my system into energetic coherence, where the electromagnetic field of your brain and your heart are synchronized. And there's been all this fascinating research that I then had to dive into about how when we move into that state, we actually are impacting, they've been able to measure it 30 feet, but it's much further than that.
So the heart math work?
Heart Math Institute. Heart math, one of the many people that are doing amazing research in this. So she showed me basically how to move myself into that state. And then she said, and if he's willing, give him a hug where you pull love into your heart from above or even behind, and then you move that into his heart, heart to heart hug. Like, I never heard of this before. Now, all these years later, he's now 27, he still asks me for what he calls grounding hugs. He loves them.
Oh.
But when I came home that day, he was in ninth grade, thought I was a total idiot, depressed, anxious, disenfranchised from the world. And, you know, I move myself into coherence and he comes, I go into his room. I'm like, I have to tell you something. I met this woman today and I told him what she said. And I'm expecting him to just like roll his eyes and make some obnoxious crack because he's a real scientist and everything was factual and blah, blah, blah. And he said, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I think what you're saying is true. And then I said, oh, well, let me give you this hug that she told me about. And he melted. And this kid didn't, you know, didn't want to touch me, much less melt. And then I didn't say another word. God forbid I seem invested in anything because he would reject it. But then a week later, he came home and said, you know, I was in my locker today and I was having a pretty good day. And then all of a sudden, I just felt really angry and depressed. And then I realized, oh, there's a girl right in the locker, a few lockers down. It must be her that's angry and depressed. And that was the beginning of his healing. And I was like, what the hell just happened? I got to understand this. And then I started diving into that. And that led me to quantum physics. And then that led me to what eventually became my own awakening and quantum love. But it started with desperation to help my kids.
Wow.
I want to take a moment to give a loud shout out to The Embody Lab, which is one of the most incredible resources for body-based and somatic therapies. This show is all about healing, and The Embody Lab does exactly that. Whether you're on your own journey of transformation and discovery, or enhancing your skill sets in your career as like a coach or a therapist, a body worker, or really any career where you are supporting other gently used humans, the Embody Lab is your place for deep, inspiring, and impactful workshops, certificates, masterclasses, and an incredible community of like-minded folks. I love the Embody Lab, and so do so many other people that call it a platform to come home to over and over again. The Embody Lab is giving my listeners an exclusive offer, a one-time 10% off code to enhance your embodied well-being. All you have to do is go to theembodylab.com and use the code GENTLYUSED10 at checkout.
Did you ever read that book? What was it called? Indigo Kids.
Yes. Like he was total Indigo child.
Because he's of that age group where like they were all... Yes.
Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, but Lord knows as their parent, it's been a shit show. All of my kids are that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Star children, rainbow children, indigo children. Lord help me. I mean, God bless the world, but Lord help me raising those people.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for those who are listening, Indigo Children is a book, or not just a book, but it's representative of children who have these incredible empathic capacities, as Dr. Laura was talking about in relation to her son.
Yeah, they all do. They're very attuned. They came here from a spiritual perspective. If you subscribe to this, I do. Mm-hmm. It's believed that many of them have come here at this. They're all, most of the kids being born now are this because they're coming to help, you know, save us. They're tapped in and tuned in and spiritually connected and deep and wise. Yeah. And very, very, very old souls, and they're going to change the world. Mm. But they're hard as hell to raise in the world and in the traditional school system. God help us.
Yeah. Yeah. When I worked in pediatrics years ago, I would just hand out that book quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. That's a blessing that you did that, because a lot of parents don't understand, and certainly healthcare professionals and teachers historically don't understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're powerful, very intuitive, very tapped in and tuned in, very, very wise, and in many ways, much wiser than us.
Yeah.
But they aren't going to sit down and be quiet at their desk and listen. You know, they're not going to do that.
No, it goes against their very nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you reach this point via this process with your son. I mean, as you're pulling love in and giving it to him, did you keep some for yourself?
Well, that's an interesting question, because at first I didn't, because I didn't fully understand, you know, this is an evolution, right? So this started in like 2011. So it's been a continued evolution for me. But I would say about 5 or 6 years ago, I don't even remember. I think I was on some retreat. I don't remember how it kind of finally, I had this epiphany, this like, oh my God, but it's changed my life, that we are not supposed to give energy from us. Mm-hmm. We are supposed to give energy through us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never doing that. So when I was sharing love or even sharing energy with someone, and I do a lot, I work a lot with energy and moving energy through the body from, you know, exchanging energy. It had never occurred to me before then that that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be pulling energy in from the universe, from God, from love, from whatever you want to call it, and moving it through me.
Mm.
And when I got that, it changed everything. Because now, even when I'm working with someone, I'm aware that what I'm giving them, or even what I'm saying, or even what, as I'm talking to you now, like before, usually before, and I did this before I hopped on this recording, I always kind of ground and open my channels and invite love to move through me. And so when I'm speaking, when I'm therapizing, when I'm healing, working with people, I'm very aware that none of it's coming from me. I'm just like letting myself be used. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm curious if in the process of letting love move through you, that it also meant that you stopped giving yourself up. Like there was the self-abandonment, the codependency no longer a thing. And you actually got to be home in yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have given every cell in order to be accepted and loved. You know, I would give everything away, which I think is partly why I ended up with cancer. I mean, for many of us, I have yet to meet a person who had breast cancer, female or male, who doesn't overgive to everyone and under receive themselves. Mm. It seems to be universal. And it took that, right? I had to have the whole house blown down for me to finally say, fuck this. Like, I'm not giving everything of myself anymore. I can't. Yeah. Like, I got sick. Like, I can't anymore. And that was the first time in my life that I actually, and it was really uncomfortable. And there has been phases of this, because I still had to peel some of those layers of the onion away around just receiving support. Because in my family, like, that was a burden. I wasn't allowed to need anything. Because no one had any capacity to give to me. They just needed me to give to them, right? And that's how I stayed safe and got approval and love. But if I needed too much, or was, you know, if I was too needy or really scared and needed too much comforting or anything else, that was like, you know, it was a burden. And I would be kind of annoying. I would be annoying. So I had to really learn. And that's what it took to teach me to receive and to not just be the giver. But getting back to the self-worth thing, really the biggest path to self-worth is when you start to tap in and tune in and let love move through you, and you start to really feel how much you are loved and how much love and abundance is in you and of you and moving through you all the time, even if you're not aware of it. When you start to do that, it's kind of impossible not to know how loved you are.
Mm.
It's kind of impossible not to feel it.
Mm. That's such a beautiful image too. And I forgot the guy's name. I think Craig is his last name, who is like a big researcher. And like, you know, research is interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of supports our own embodied phenomenological experience, or our own embodied experience. But one of the things his main research showed was like, the more we self-abandon, the less correlation to self-esteem. So no self-esteem, no embodiment essentially equaled no self-esteem.
Yes.
So the more we could stay here in ourselves, the more this sense of self-esteem or self-love organically emerged, because it couldn't not.
Yes. Yeah. It can't not emerge once you're in it and allowing it. But we, because of our traumas and everything else, we learn early, and I did too, not to be. I mean, I would say it wasn't until 2.5 years ago that I fully came into my body out of, once again, necessity. So it's been an evolution.
Can you tell me more about that process of that fullness of landing in your body?
Yeah. I mean, once again, it came, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't even call this an AFGE. This was, well, like an AFGE, another fucking explosion. I mean, it was more than an experience. But when my 16-year-old was murdered 2.5 years ago with fentanyl poisoning, so he had, a dealer had gotten in touch with him on Snapchat and gave him a colorful menu of, you know, one Xanax, Percocet, whatever, Coke, cannabis, you know, for a few dollars delivered to your house like a pizza. And this, I had no idea, but at the time, but it's, you know, prolific on Snapchat, on social media in general. So he went ahead and ordered something, sheltering at home during the pandemic, and took it on Super Bowl Sunday. And like 65% of these drugs on the street, it was laced with fentanyl, where it only takes a few grains of sand to kill you, you know, a fentanyl, a few grains. Yeah. So he died in his room on Super Bowl Sunday. His brother and I discovered him. And you can imagine, you know, I don't have to describe the impossible to describe depth and breadth of the devastation of that. And all I can say is thank you. I'm so unbelievably grateful that I had had all of these experiences leading up to this, in particular, you know, discovering and writing Quantum Love, because I didn't even have to believe, I fully knew and had the experience of the fact that we are all pure vibrating atomic energy. We aren't solid. We seem solid, but on the quantum level, you know, if we were to look at ourselves through an atomic microscope, we're vibrating atoms. All of us are. We're energy, and energy can't be created or destroyed. So I didn't have to discover or accept or learn the fact that energy can't die. We can only change form.
Yeah.
So his body died, but he's still here, you know, and I can still access him, sort of like a long distance relationship. But that was a huge comfort. But still, I couldn't breathe for months. I literally couldn't move for a year. I was completely demolished. And a week after it wasn't even a week, it was like 3 or 4 days after he died, I was sitting on the beach where I go to heal and be. And I have lots of clairs, you know, that I've developed through the years. Claire, you know, I know things, I see things. Mm. I had never heard things. You know how some people hear things?
Yeah.
But I did. Sitting on the beach, I heard inside my head, do you want to live or die? And it was a very clear question. And I was completely shocked when I was so immediately knew the answer that yes, I want to live, but it's kind of hard to describe in words. But you know, we all know, and I was even talking earlier about what a gift life is. We all know that it's a gift, but it was like, I understood that on such a deep, it felt physical how deeply I understood what a miracle it was to live, to breathe. And also through the way he died and losing him, because he was, you know, all the other people in my life who had died after prolonged illnesses, right? So this visceral understanding of like, 1 second you can be here and anything can happen. A second from now, you may not be here. You know, life is so fragile and we live in denial of that. And it's such a gift that we get to be here. So I was like, yes, I want to live. And I knew what the question meant. You know, it wasn't that I was going to kill myself, die by suicide. I would never do that. But I already knew what unresolved grief can do to you from my breast cancer journey. So I knew what that question meant. And so when I said, yes, I want to live, then the voice said, well, then you need to leave. And I was like, what are you talking about? I need to leave. And the voice said, you need to go into the woods and leave your family behind. What? You know, leave your family behind, go into the woods and be at least a week in your pain. Fully in your pain, or you're not going to live. And so I don't know. I can't believe I did this, but I went home to my poor husband whose son had just died 4 days ago. And our youngest was still living at our home. You know, he was a sophomore in high school. And I said, I'm sorry, I have to leave and go into the woods or I'm going to die. I'm going to go for a week. I'm laughing now. It wasn't funny at the time. And he didn't say, like, he totally didn't fuss, didn't complain, didn't resist. And I went with my best friend, Tina, who's like a master at holding space. She can handle any kind of emotion. And she was my grief concierge, I called her. But 1440 Multiversity in Santa Cruz had reached out to me because the whole world, you know, quickly heard the news. And they said, we're closed for the pandemic, but if you want to come with your family or whatever, you know, we'll open the campus for you, which was so amazing. And it all just fell into place. So I went there for a week into the Redwoods, and all my healer friends either Zoomed in or came to visit. And I did body work and breath work and grief yoga and forest bathing and hours spent in the mother tree wailing on her. You know, there's the mother trees of the Redwood Forest there on campus. And there was just, but here's the thing, back to your original question. I know I went on a tangent, but there's a purpose here of I came back into my body.
Yeah.
That was how, because I got the very clear message that if you don't let yourself go all the way into this bottomless, seemingly bottomless pit of pain, you are going to die. And I knew that, like I somehow agreed. And so with support through somatic healing therapist, while I was there every single day, I spent at least an hour with a somatic experiencing therapist who helped me come fully into my body so that I could fully feel and release the pain that was currently in it. And I immediately learned what I try to help people understand today, which is that we're scared shitless to go there because we really feel like I'm never going to come out of there. You know, it will take me over. But in fact, the opposite is true. It's like a pressure valve, you know, like on a pressure cooker, it's like a ton of the steam gets released and you feel clearer and calmer and lighter and more grounded and more present in your body. We can't be in our bodies when we're unwilling to feel the feelings there. And if we're unwilling to feel the feelings, that's what causes disease, dis-ease, you know, the inflammation and the chronic diseases and the cancers. So I quickly realized as I experienced it, because it only takes once or twice and you learn this, they're like, oh my God, that was intense. But whew, it's like taking the biggest, most intense, huge emotional poop, you know?
Yeah. That was not the word I was expecting. But now that you say it, fuck yes. Yes, I do know what you mean. That now that's the name of the episode, the biggest emotional poop you've ever had.
But it's true. Yeah. That's what it feels like. And so after that, I became committed, and for a year straight, every day, even when I didn't freaking want to do it because I had woke up feeling okay for a change, I would go into my little corner. My husband knew not to be concerned about the sounds that came out of the room. And I would just go through my process, which I teach people to do now, of coming into my body, grounding there, scanning it, putting my attention on any of the sensations, and then letting my body take over. And it just takes 10 to 15 minutes. It doesn't take long. And your entire world changes. So that's when I came back into my, and boy, is it more fun life when you're in your freaking body. I had, you know, it's like, you don't know what you can get used to until you get used to it. But I didn't realize what I was giving up. I didn't even realize how little I was in my body. I would have said I was someone who was pretty embodied after all the trauma work I had done, but I didn't realize how in my body I could be and how, and how much better life would be there. My intuition, my inner guidance, my capacity for sensations and joy and connection and clarity and discernment. It's all better when you're in it.
Yeah.
This show is also brought to you by the absolutely stunning and powerful tools for transformation that are created by Omala. Oof, even the name Omala transports you to a place of flow and vitality. These are some of my favorite products ever, like an amazing color-changing yoga mat that responds to your temperature and presence and reflects back your posture in real time. They have this incredible smelling skin balm candle that heats up to activate all the essential oils and vitamins that your skin has been craving for. I mean, look, if I could live in a giant bath of this candle, I would 100% do it. They also have these journals that lead you into a profound insight, and then you can plant those journals to create a stunning flower garden. I mean, damn, if that's not both deep and inventive, I don't know what is. If you're someone who desires to live in a luxurious flow of life and who believes in transformative wellness, then you have to check out Omala. Omala is giving my listeners an exclusive discount to treat yourself to something that is as special as you, boo. All you have to do is go to omala.com, that's omala.com, use the discount code DrScott10 at checkout, and a portion of every purchase goes to an incredible charity. You got this.
And this, I think, is, we're talking about what is the link between all the things that you do. I feel like this, like, you're here to be with what's here. So whether that's in relationships, whether we're talking about the work you do with sex or relationships or couples or grief.
Yeah.
The common denominator here is that you're here to and can be with any of these things.
Any of these. And that there all seem to be things that nobody else wants to talk about or is comfortable talking about, right? Sex and death.
Sex and death.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're all like, you know, in that existential way, we know we're going to very well come into this world. We're going to be birthed. We're likely to have sex at some point.
Let's hope.
And we know that there's going to be death. We're going to experience death.
Yeah. Yeah. All are true. The only thing, sex and death, the only thing I don't talk about is taxes. But sex and death are the other two sure things.
Watch your next New York Times bestseller book be about taxes. Now, you just set yourself up for that.
Right.
I mean, it's interesting because we could, like, again, separate them out. And I could be like, okay, tell me about sex and tell me about death. But, like, I might say, Dr. Laura, tell me about sex and death.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot about that. I'm like, what, who am I?
So back to the existentialism. Yeah.
I mean, like, what, how do I even describe, like, I'm this person that for 30 years has been devoted to helping people build better intimacy, love, sex, relationships. And I'm still super committed to that. And I love that aspect of my work. I'm less interested in describing how to give a perfect blowjob, but I can do that. I'm more interested in talking about, you know, quantum sex. Like, that's much more exciting to me. But I can talk about sex, love, and relationships all day and be totally content. And I feel so pulled and guided and supported. I've been flabbergasted by how helpless and untrained and unknowledgeable most of us are about how to grieve, you know? Mm. And we're all grieving right now. Mm. So I'm so drawn to helping people be with loss. And also the fact that I've discovered that grief is actually a phenomenal, powerful, impossibly beautiful portal of transformation. And you can not only survive it, which of course you can do, but you can thrive through it. That doesn't mean that you wanted it to happen or that you're glad it happened, that loss. But it is a powerful, transformative portal that is so profound and beautiful if you have support and know how to navigate it. And most people don't. We don't like talking about it. We don't like thinking about it. We just want to push it away. But it is up for every, I don't know anyone who isn't experiencing some sort of grief right now, even if a loved one of yours didn't die. Over the past 3 or 4 years, we have all lost relationships, jobs, identities, friends, loved ones. And so even just with what's happening in the world, there's collective grief right now. So I feel so pulled to that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just doing it, but it's also kind of confusing at the same time. But I think if I had to create a thread, or if I, you know, as I think about the thread between sex and death, it's really all creation. It's love, you know, It's an expression of love. Even if you're having a one night stand, you're loving yourself, right? And you're loving your body through that. Sex is always an expression of self-love or mutual love or other love, you know, in its purest form, even if we're unconscious of it, right?
Yeah.
It's an expression of love, and grief is a direct expression of love. The degree to which you grieve is the degree to which you love. We wouldn't grieve if we didn't love, you know? So I see that thread. I see the thread of creation. You know, our sexual center is our creative center. Creation of life comes from sex, and death is the other side of that circle. I don't know. Like, I'm still figuring out what the thread is and letting it unfold, but I'm simultaneously intrigued by this evolution in me, but I'm also confused. You know, just in terms of like the external, not inside myself, but just in terms of like, how do I help this make sense to people? I'm not sure yet. And I'm not sure I care, but I know eventually I'll need to.
Well, I mean, maybe the common thread is that you're just helping all these gently used humans be more in their human experience, which is going to likely be intimacy, relationships, sex, and grief.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are
big kahunas.
The big kahunas. How do I have that quantum sex stuff?
I have a course coming out right now on quantum sex. I love it. It was people's favorite chapter. I have a chapter on quantum sex in my book, Quantum Love. But basically, quantum sex is sort of a conglomeration. It has aspects of Tantra, Kama Sutra, Taoism in it. But it's really about becoming aware of the subtle energies that are constantly moving through our bodies and harnessing them. You know, for most of us, the experience of sex, whether we're having sex with ourselves or someone else, you know, there's an emotional aspect to it, obviously, or an intellectual aspect. But most of the physical sensations and even the energetic sensations of sex are localized to the genitals. Right? Like that's where we feel our pleasure. That's where we feel our arousal. With quantum sex, you learn to move that energy up through the different energy centers of your body. You can have, you know, seven chakra orgasms. You can move the energy between the two of you. You can play with the energy and all of these. And in the sensation, you're literally pulling up the genital sensation through your body. So it really is powerful. It's extremely pleasurable. But what I have found most exciting about it in the work that I do with people is that for my entire career, the number one question I get asked all over the world, and I speak all over the world, is, you know, from people in the audience who are in relationships, is how do you spice it up? How do you keep it interesting? How do you spice it up, right? So for so many years, and I still can do that, I would give you tips and tools and role plays and toys and fantasies. And then I could give you 365 of those. And then in a year or maybe a year and a half, because a few of them you would like and do more than once, you would come back and be like, okay, the novelty of those has worn off.
Absolutely.
You know, give me more. And what I discovered with quantum sex is that is what we've really been looking for with the novelty that we seek is what we're really seeking is an experience of intensity, intensity of arousal, intensity of experience cognitively, intensity of connection, right? And so quantum sex, you can do 3,000 times and the intensity is always there. You know, and so it allows for and creates profound intensity as well as pleasure and arousal that is sustainable, that isn't rooted in something new I've never tried before. I mean, it does feel new every time, but it creates an energetic, emotional, and spiritual intensity that is really profound, especially as you practice it.
Yeah. I have to say that, I mean, as you're describing it, that is my favorite sex position, quantum sex.
Exactly.
And like, I've had the same question too from folks that are like, how do I spice it up? And I'm like, well, why do you need to spice it up? Like, how is the level of that energetic interchange?
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you mean?
Thinking about that.
No. Yeah. And I was like, if that's not there, then you know, that's spicy as shit.
Right.
And every moment is changing.
Yes.
Because energy is in flux. Exactly. It's not static. And so you're in the flux together.
And totally present and totally embodied present. And totally in your senses.
Ooh, it's so hot.
Yeah.
Dr. Larry, that's so hot. Ooh, God.
Very hot. It's hot.
Really hot. And it's like, I mean, I was recently telling this to my partner, and I was like, penetration, blah, whatever. Like, but this, like, I can take it or leave it, like, whatever. Or even all the other, like, tricks in the trade and, like, whirls of the tongue and whatever. Yeah. I'm like, this, and I just called it energetic sex, but, like, this energetic exchange, I'm like, oof, the best. And the people who can't do that, they could be hot as can be.
Yeah. No, like, I think a lot of people can't do that. Yeah. I think most people can't do that in large part because they've never, it's never occurred to them. There's no, there's no roadmap for it. They don't know that it's even possible. And they've been getting their sex education like so many people from porn, which is the freaking worst sex education on the planet. So I think most people don't have any idea about what's possible on the energetic level, and they get their sex education from porn, which is the worst sex education there is because it's geared toward sort of a skewed sense of what people look like, even genitally, what turns, you know, you touch a woman's shoulder and she's shrieking in orgasmic ecstasy, or you ejaculate in her face and she's like having 12 orgasms. So it's a skewed sense of what turns people on.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, we've been conditioned to being dopamine junkies when it comes to sex, right? So the reason we keep looking for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing is because the novelty is worn out. We get aroused with novelty. So we think novelty is needed in order for us to get aroused. But that's not true.
Not true at all. I mean, I was just on Emily. Do you know Emily? Sex with Emily's podcast. And I was like, Emily, vanilla is so hot. It is so hot because there's so much in it. And when you start to add all these, like, quote unquote, what I think are sometimes distractions from the actual intimacy of that energy exchange, which is vulnerable as shit and spicy. And you can't discern where you begin and where you end and where your feet are and where your head is. And all of a sudden you're in the flux, as I call it, like. And it
requires a complete presence, vulnerability, and intimacy. You know, I am this leading sex, love, relationship person. And about 10 or so years ago, as I was starting to really explore, I guess this is like 2017 or something, as I was really starting to explore this much more deeply. My husband is my unwitting guinea pig. I do experiments on him all the time. And then I wait, you know, I watch what is, like, can he feel me sending you to this spot or doing this thing, you know, silently that you wouldn't feel except energetically. And then I watch and see how he responds, you know, like to the pink sparkly vagina technique or something else. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he always would, but I was telling him about some of it and I was talking, I forget what, how it even came up, but I was talking about soul gazing and he said, well, let's do it. I mean, this probably was 10 years ago. And so I'm like, okay. So we sit across from each other and we're so, you know, we're looking deeply into each other's eyes and I started to touch him and he's like, no, don't touch me. You were we're just going to look into each other's eyes. And I started freaking out. I couldn't do it. He was totally fine staring into the depths of my soul. My husband of 10 years who I'd been raising three, you know, who I deeply trusted.
Yeah.
I could not do it without touching him or kissing him, you know, which I realized in that moment was a distraction from the intimacy. And I was so appalled at myself. I was like, wait a minute, I can't do this. I can't, what's happening? But it was really a wake-up call that I had some intimacy blocks that I would have never thought of, you know, and a way in which I was uncomfortable being totally seen and vulnerable and receiving that without distracting you by touching your penis or kissing, you know, like making it into something that wouldn't make me the total focus, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really powerful and was a huge part. You know, I really worked on that. Now I can stare at him without touching him. No problem. But
nice.
But I think that, you know, and I'm me, like, imagine what your average person, it's extremely powerful and beyond pleasurable, but you have to be willing to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And felt.
And felt. And to see and feel.
Yeah. Oof. I think I stumbled into this mostly from my background in somatics.
Same thing. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So all these years of like, and I was, you know, a DO. And so like palpation skills and all these things of like, you know, adjusting a cranial bone, you know, like, and all of these skill sets and getting, again, also like you getting back into my body. And I was like, oh, this is actually where I feel safer. The safest is in this, what you're calling the quantum sex.
This is 5D sex. You know, this is next level sex.
Yeah.
And it's beyond the logistics. I mean, there are logistics to it, but it's really much more than that.
Mm. I wish it for everyone who's interested.
Yes.
And they can get some of that through your course and through your book, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Or come hang out with you at a retreat or something when you're... Do you do like quantum sex retreats?
I'm going to start. Yeah, I'm definitely going to start. And I'm actually working on a book right now, Quantum Sex. So it'll be more to come on that.
I'm excited to hear that. And is there some of those same, and I'm going to just see if there's a link here, if you're open to it, of like doing that deep work of being seen and being felt. And then in your work on conscious grieving. And I know it's it could be a leap, it's totally, but I'm curious.
No, it's not. It's not, because to have quantum sex, like we were saying, you have to be completely in your body. You have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to feel it all. You have to open your heart. You have to bring down the walls.
Yeah.
And loss will do that for you. But the only way you survive it is by doing that for yourself. And I think that's one of the most terrible, beautiful things about tremendous loss. And whether that's the sudden ending of a relationship or a major crisis, like something that causes you tremendous grief and loss, it's the old butterfly analogy. It literally turns you to, you know, when the caterpillar goes in the cocoon, the caterpillar doesn't grow wings and turn into a butterfly. The caterpillar has it in its DNA that once it's in the cocoon, it literally turns into green mush. Decompensates completely into nothing recognizable to its prior self, melts completely, and then rebuilds and reconfigures into this gorgeous, magical creature. And that's grief. If you let it, you know, that's what it can do. That's the metamorphosis of allowing yourself to totally decompensate with containment, obviously, because we have to somewhat keep functioning in the world. And with the knowledge that it's temporary, that it can be done in a stepwise way, that it can be done in a contained way, but that it's a portal to metamorphosis. And quantum sex is definitely, as I'm sure you've experienced, a portal. It's not a painful portal. It's an extremely pleasurable portal. So let's just say that quantum sex is a profoundly pleasurable portal and grief is a profoundly painful portal.
And where does this portal take us?
To our butterfly expression. You know, it takes us to a newer, more actualized, more empowered, more clear, more powerful, more attuned, tapped in, and tuned in, and purely expressed version of ourselves.
So well said. So well said. And you, and the way you lay it all out in this way of these portals of like, these are human experiences, intimacy, death, and these portals more into our humanity, into our humanness.
Yeah. Absolutely. And into our power, you know, that loss, in order to survive it, I had to totally commit to my body and listen to her. So I don't say yes to anything that my body doesn't say yes to. I don't say no to anything my body doesn't say no to. And that can be really annoying because lots of things I want to do and my body's like, And lots of things I don't really feel like doing and my body say, let's go. So, but that commitment in and of itself has been unbelievable, like endless gifts come from that. There's so many things like that.
That the empowerment, and like that is also just the pure gift of coming back home to yourself, is once again coming into the birthright of your power.
Yeah. And your worth, back to self-worth. It's hard not to, you know, when you're in your body, you can, and when you're willing to go, this is the other thing I've learned, that when you're willing to go all the way into the worst, deepest pain, once again, with support, with containment, you are stretching your capacity. So what I didn't realize, which was a lovely surprise, was that the deeper I was willing to go into the pain, the deeper into pain I was willing to stretch, the higher and more expansive the joy I was capable of feeling. And I, you know, I thought I could feel joy before, and I could, but I feel a lot more joy now when I feel joy. It's like my capacity has been stretched. And I always knew that all emotions kind of come out the same channel. And when you're squelching one, you're squelching the capacity of all of them. So if you're unwilling to feel sadness, your ability to feel joy is going to be limited to the degree to which you're unwilling to feel sadness, you know? Mm-hmm. I knew that, but I didn't really understand the extent of it and how the deeper and wider the pain you allow yourself to feel, the deeper and wider the joy you'll be able to feel. That's a nice payoff.
That's such a profound place that I actually want to like land in the profoundness of that. And to say also, thank you for saying yes to us, to gifting us with your incredible wisdom, your story, and the vulnerability of sharing that, and all the things, the gifts that you acquired from that, that you're imparting on us.
Thank you for having me and letting me take a big emotional poop here.
Oh, the best emotional poop ever. Dr. Laura, where can people find you, hug you, dance with you, learn how to do that quantum sex or grieve with you?
Yeah, I do a lot of ecstatic dancing. You can come dance with me. You can learn all the stuff I'm doing on my website. I'm always putting up the latest retreat or event. I have a big event coming in December 2nd around good grief. It's called Healing from Loss with Love. And all the proceeds are going toward scholarship fund to take grieving mamas on retreat. But the day is about just about anyone who's experienced loss. And I have all kinds of amazing speakers coming, mediums, somatic healers, sound baths, grief experts. So if you go to drlauraberman.com, that's my website. You can also listen to my podcast, Language of Love. You can follow me on social media, all at Dr. Laura Berman. I have a YouTube channel, Dr. Laura Berman Official, where I'm always making videos on how to love and be loved better and grieve better and quantum sex better. And I have a course coming out. Quantum sex.
Well, you better quantum sex better.
Yeah. Why not? We can all quantum sex better.
I bet we can. I can't wait. Thank you so much. You're and thank welcome. You all for listening. And go follow, go hang out with Dr. Laura, go ecstatically dance with her. She is an incredible being in this world.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Gently Used Human podcast with Dr. Scott Lyons and friends. Visit gentlyused.com for fun extras, including submitting your questions for advice from a Midwestern mom. And don't forget to spill the tea and gossip about the show with all your friends and frenemies. And show some love by giving us 5 stars and leaving a review in your favorite apps. This helps us connect with all the other gently used humans out there. Oh, and by the way, you look fierce today.